Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plub, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 268, and you are talking to two really, really happy guys right now because in the last 30 minutes, both of us have gotten the notification, no school tomorrow because, of course, we live in Nebraska. And 10 minutes ago, I just got home from my daily walk, which it's about 68 to 70 degrees, and school is already canceled tomorrow because we're going to have a blizzard here in Nebraska tomorrow. So why do I live here? I'm not sure. I can tell you one of the reasons why I live here is because of a guy by the name of Jabe Wirtz, who is a great dude, and he is from McCool Junction, Nebraska, and he is going to talk about a lot of different things here today, the boys' head coach at McCool Junction. But before we get to Coach Wirtz, we are going to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, have them go see our founding sponsor here, Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on A Pen and a Napkin, so be sure to follow us there. I think I set a record for most polls in one day on A Pen and a Napkin here today. 10 NCAA March Madness tournament polls there that we had out there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it may be, please subscribe, please download, rate, review, give us 5 stars so that we can work our way up in the podcasting world. When people look for coaching basketball podcasts, A Pen and a Napkin pops up there a little bit higher than it normally would. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough with that stuff. Coach Wirtz, you have a day off from school and you get to...
Great.
You act like you've been busy the last 2 or 3 weeks.
I had some smarter, more veteran coaches the last couple of years tell me, hey, you know, right around that postseason basketball time, you need to be doing a lot of projects. And we're doing a lot of projects, and I haven't been doing a lot of grading. And so quarterly grades are due tomorrow, and I feel like a college kid, and I have a time deadline, and I'm going to be up cramming to get those suckers graded. So.
Well, I think the educational gods knew that you and probably a few other coaches coming off the state tournament needed that day off here, and that's why, again, and folks, I'm not kidding you. Take a look at the map. By the time you hear this on Thursday, this will be long gone. And probably the snow from the blizzard, there's a good chance it's probably have melted by the time you hear this on Thursday. But yesterday it was 80 degrees. Today it's about 70 degrees. And tomorrow we have school canceled because of a blizzard. So God bless the Midwest and global warming and all that other stuff. So, but no, excited to have Jabe on the podcast here this week. Jabe's been at the coaches clinic I think pretty much every year, haven't you been there, Jabe? And that's how we've kind of got to know each other a little bit. How many years have you been?
Yeah, so I've been the
last 3 years. Yep. So that's how we've kind of gotten to know each other, and he's long overdue to have Coach Wirtz on the podcast, so excited to have him on here. Coach, I know some things about you. It's time for you to tell the world about your basketball journey and how you ended up in McCool Junction, Nebraska.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Marty. My basketball journey was, you know, I played basketball high school. I played at High Plains, a small Class D school in Nebraska, and was a part of some really good teams. We made state 4 years in a row, and it just kind of felt like, you know, something that was just expected. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years and become a coach, and you're like, it is really freaking hard to get to the state tournament. But so I was fortunate to, you know, play for some really good coaches and enjoyed my time as a basketball player. And I just knew, you know, I love school, love sports, and I wanted to continue that. So I went to college, got my social studies education degree. And actually my first coaching gig was when I was doing a practicum at Ashland Greenwood.
Okay.
I just happened to get connected with a guy by the name of Brad Jacobson, Brett Davis. And so Brad Jacobson's son, he was an eighth grader. I was helping coach their eighth graders. And his son was Cale Jacobson, who now plays in Nebraska.
Yep.
And, you know, again, my first experience coaching basketball is eighth grade boys, and your lefty point guard is a grown man. And I would come home and tell my girlfriend, now wife, saying, like, this coach is not easy. Like, we win all the time. I spent a really quick yacht.
Yeah.
And so anyway, when I got into student teaching, Coolidge Junction was in our conference. So I just knew their superintendent pretty well. And he encouraged me to come student teach here. Mm-hmm. And so I was student taught. I was an assistant basketball coach during that time. And then I ended up getting a job here, stayed here and assisted for 4 years. And then was fortunate enough to become head boys basketball coach the following year. And this is my third year coaching high school boys here. And, you know, I also coach junior high boys. So basketball season is a long year for me. You know, mm-hmm. we start junior high basketball in October, and from November to about February, I coach basketball from about 2 to 6 p.m. every day.
Wow. Wow. Between the junior high and the high school. Wow. Wow. That's a crazy schedule, my friend. How much caffeine do we ingest during those 2 to 6, that 2 to 6 time period?
You know, it's funny you said that, because I came home today and it was like the first thing in my mouth is like, I haven't had any caffeine today the first time in who knows how long. But yeah, we definitely take a little, about 60 milligram caffeine in my water before junior high. And then we redose up right before high school. So
yep. Yep. In celebration of Karen Self, my friend Karen Self from Phoenix, Arizona. Jay, when was your Karen Self a pen and a napkin moment? When do you remember first drawing some stuff on a napkin or a piece of paper or whatever it may be that like, this, I kind of like this artwork. This is a lot better than art class.
Oh man. No, I would say my first time was, I went to watch some of my junior high kids that were playing on like some club basketball, and seriously just leaned over to the mom closest to me, asked her if she had a pen. And the only thing I had to write on was a napkin. And I just drew some stuff up for my junior high girls game. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the moment hit. And then, it's to this day, I was telling somebody I'm going to be on this podcast, and I told them a little bit about it. And I said, if you look in the glove box of my car, I still have like four, napkins just kind of slammed up in there, because you never know when you're going to need that one baseline out of bounds play you saw in 2021 at a AAU game.
Yep. Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah. You never know. That's, I don't know. I'd be scared to count how many 3-ring binders I have at school, filled with just legal pad paper after legal pads of X's and O's and sayings and motivational stuff and all that good deal. So I know exactly where you're coming from there. So assistant for a few years at McCool Junction. You know, like you said, you got a little run at Ashland Greenwood there. And then, you're obviously preparing. You wanted to be a head coach. What were some things that you tried to do, especially kind of coming fresh off the process and being a younger guy? What are some things that you tried to do as an assistant coach that would prepare you to be a head coach?
Early on, just trying to absorb absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. And, each head coach, you know, handles their assistants differently. I just think as my first year, you know, just kind of getting familiar with the head coach and the school itself, I just kind of sat back and would, you know, do whatever I was asked, whatever I was told, and mm-hmm. the best I possibly could. I mean, I would fill up water bottles before practice. I would do it as best I possibly could. You know, I got it right to the brim. And then as time went on, I just kept trying to do more, you know, as the right way they could, you know, without stepping on any toes. I did not want to overstep my bounds, but I would just try to take on as much responsibility as I could, because I learned from a young age, like, the only way you're really going to figure this stuff out is by crying and falling flat on your face. So, from first year of just standing in the back and absorbing to the second year, you know, doing our guards and post breakdown and just kind of expanding from there and scouting my tail off, you know. I tried to watch as much film as I could and help out in any way possible.
Yeah, that was one thing I really did. Now, again, I'm seasoned and experienced enough. I would record games on VHS tapes. And then I would basically in the spring and summer after our seasons were over, I would watch a game a day, just looking for X's and O's. And I would have, you know, 30 VHS tapes filled with three games a piece. So, I mean, it was just, that's the way I grew as well. So, I mean, scouting, watching ball, different things like that. I think that's a great way to get acclimated. What do you feel that you did right, Jabe? And what are some things that I wish I would have spent more time developing this part of my skill set?
I think the moment I became head coach, the first thing I did is I just networked as much as humanly possible. I kid you not, it's not even a plug for your podcast or for your clinic or anything, even though I will definitely highly recommend the Pen and Napkin Clinic and podcast to anybody I see. The first thing I did was the day I got the job to be head coach is I signed up for the Pen and Napkin Clinic. And I called my best friend, Thomas Young, who's a basketball coach in Neely Oakdale. And I said, you want to come with me? And so we were just two young pups who were both going to be in our first year the next year, trying to, you know, go out there and learn as much as we could. But I also called a local legend here, in my opinion, Sutton's former coach, Steve Spielberg, all within 2 hours. Like, I was like, I gotta start picking brains of the smartest people around. And I think that's where I think that's what I'm most proud of is, you know, you come in as a young coach and your ego is huge. You think you're going to be the man. You think you know everything. You watch two YouTube videos on dribble drills and you're like, I got this.
Yeah.
The thing I'm probably most proud of is just realize I don't know everything. Like, I know what I don't know, and I don't know very much. And mm-hmm. So I just tried to get a hold of the smartest people I knew to learn. Mm-hmm. As far as like what I wish I would do differently, you know, I think, honestly, it's something kind of minor. I wish I would be more organized, mm-hmm. you know, because I am super scatterbrained. Like I said, I do have napkins and paper towels and just random notes just all over the place. And it drives my wife bonkers. because I tell you what, I got some really good stuff, you know, and I bumped into, you know, as Coach Hughie, you know, at Oakley Craig at an AAU tournament, and he's talking to me about how their defense does things. I write it down and I'm like, I don't know where that notebook's at. You know, it's gone. So yeah. If I could do anything differently, I wish I would just be more organized human being. But I think that's just me in general. I need to be more organized. So, because you can get a lot of really good things, but if you don't keep track of it, I mean, I don't know. It's easy to forget things too.
Yep. Yep. You know, I appreciate the plug, by the way. Thank you very much. You know, April 12th. Mary Our Queen Parish Gymnasium, great lineup. Not that I'm plugging that anyway, or anybody to hear a commercial on this anyway. So, but no, I think that's right. And you have a nice list of folks that you've worked with and reached out to. Let's talk about them a little bit. Chris Callen.
So Chris is it's a unique story. So Coach Callen, he coached me in the summer. He was kind of like my summer basketball travel team coach. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really fell in love with the game of basketball. So, and high school, I was definitely a role player. And I loved it. And I just craved doing my job the best I possibly could. But in the summer, you know, Coach Town really challenged me to kind of expand my comfort zone and push myself a little bit and give me that opportunity. And honestly, just developed a great relationship with me. And he's the one that taught me, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about X's and O's, but the relationships and the memories you create with your kids. So Coach Callen, just from the get-go, was the best coach I've ever played for. But unfortunately, he passed away in 2020. He was the head coach of Axtell mm-hmm. for a couple of years, took them to a state tournament, did a lot of great things. So he's always with me. You know, that's one guy that I'm always going to make sure his legacy continues on any chance I can, because without him, I'm probably not coaching right now.
Yep.
So, I mean, he, like I said, just relationships with him just taught me how important that really is. Without relationships, your kids won't do it.
Yep. How about Nebraska legend, Jim Weeks?
Yeah, Jim Weeks, until I realized he's our science teacher here at McCool, one of our science teacher's best friends. Like, I'm pretty sure our science teacher was in his wedding, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they're that close. And I just found that out, like, on a whim. I have worked here for 4 years as an assistant and never known that. And then one day I was talking about, like, man, I that Jim Weeks is kind of a scary dude, like, but that's a guy I wish I could talk to. And just in passing, our science teacher goes, "Jim?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm sure on a first name basis with him." I said, "It's Coach Weeks." And he's like, "Nah, Jim and our buddies." And so through that connection, I was able to develop a really good relationship with Coach Weeks. And in fact, he's probably been one of the biggest helps for me as a young coach. Like, he sets the standard for preparation and, just the level of intensity he brings to his job and passion. And I think, I just assumed this guy was, the smartest X's and O's coach in the whole world for how successful he's been. And with all due respect, I know he understands this, like, he'll tell you flat to your face he's not, but he's just gonna outwork you. He's gonna wake up earlier than you. He's gonna go to sleep later than you. He's gonna watch more film than you. He's gonna do whatever it takes to beat you. And I think that really resonated with me because, again, like, I know for a fact, I'm not a college basketball player. I was a very average basketball player in high school, so it doesn't come naturally to me. A lot of the vocabulary and the X's and O's part, I've had to really spend some time and work on it. And, listening to him, if you want to be extraordinary, like, you'd act extraordinary and quit being ordinary, And so that was huge. He's been an incredible role model for me.
Yeah, Jim is at his heart a really good guy. He's just got a kind of a gruff exterior, but once you kind of move past that, he's more than willing to talk and to share and to put ideas out there for you, don't you think?
Yeah, well, and what makes them different is I'm a third-year coach, and when I bump paths with him or cross paths with him, like, he's the one interviewing me. Like, he wants to know why we do what we do on baseline out of bounds, and, like, he's gonna write that down. And the crazy thing is, like, it's for two reasons. One, if he thinks it'll make his team better, he's gonna implement it. Or two, if he sees me in 7 years from now in a district final, he's gonna remember that. Like, and that's the craziest part is, like, I know every time I leave talking to Coach Weeks, it's like, that son of a gun has all of my secrets. Like, he knows the inside and out because he is such a student of the game. Like, he is, it doesn't matter if you're a junior high coach or you coach Division I college basketball. You have his respect if you take the time to coach basketball, and he wants to know why you do what you do. So you have to be on your A game when you're coming in to talk to Coach Weeks, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So, Kylie Yates.
Again, I'm so glad you brought up Coach Yates. Coach Yates, and this state tournament run has been my rock. Like, that guy. And the craziest thing is, though, I never would have met him if it wasn't for your clinic. It's just a wild, wild story. Our PE teacher taught and coached in Iowa. It's like Exira, I think is what it was called. And he was talking to me one day about this Hawk chart that Coach Doug Newton used. I'm going, I don't know who the heck Coach Newton is, but that's awesome. And so I sit at your, and I love the way you break down your clinic to where it's coaches talk around a table, and it's me and five other dudes. They're all from the state of Iowa. And I'm sitting here talking to this guy with a Hawk on his shirt. And I said, "There's no way you're Doug Newton." He said, "Yes, I am." And so I got to know him, and then the next coach was Kylie Yates. And I actually think our relationship started because I offended him. So I think you were talking, the question you started us with was, what defense do you run to win a game? Late game, what is your go-to? And he runs 2-3. And I remember as a 20, gosh, what was I? Probably 24-year-old coach. I just looked at him and he goes, 2-3. And I said, "Coach, how many 2-3 zones do you see in the Iowa State basketball tournament?" He goes, "At least one, because we were there." And I thought, you know what? Here, I need to shut my mouth. Like, this guy, and he's so anyway, just from there, it kind of took off. And so Coach Yates has just been such a great role model. He's as knowledgeable about the game as they come. And his willingness to share, I think, is just what sets him apart. He is so willing to help out younger coaches. And even me, since I know him, since I've started to know Kylie Yates, I probably know about another 100 coaches through the grapevine, because he just wants to help everybody. You know, he understands how hard it is to be a coach, and he wants to help out any way possible. And again, so State Mascot's burning it. You know, he tells me, he goes, what's your scouting report for the four other teams on the other side of your bracket? We haven't made State in forever. I've never made State as a coach. And I'm sitting there going, I'm worried about Elm Creek. That's who we got to play in the first round. He said, no. I know you got Elm Creek. He said, but what? Who's got the next game, and who's got the next game, and what happens if this team wins, if you got to play this team? I said, I don't know. We're probably just screwed. Yeah. Said no. He said, send me a team and then send me the three other teams. And he got me connected. I had four Iowa coaches scout the entire other side of the D1 bracket.
Wow.
I had all four scouting reports done before we played LP.
That is awesome. That is great. That's what a pen and a napkin, that's what coaching should be all about.
Oh, absolutely. Like that's what it is about.
Yeah. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Speaking of the state tournament, Coach, you would come here, you know, the clinic. We're so close, but we just haven't been able to get there. And you know, we got stopped. I think 2 years in a row, you got stopped in the district final, was it, Jabe?
Yep.
And this year, you were able to get the win. You know, what did you learn from those first 2 years of losing in that district final, and how did that affect your ability to again kind of get over that proverbial hump and get the win this year? You know, what did you learn with that?
A great question. So my first year was the first year we made the district final. This is year three, and that first year we were just kind of like surprising people left and right. Like, I was surprised. Assistant coaches and I are looking at each other in the locker room going, how do we beat that team? So we get to a district final in year one, and the thing I learned about that is, like, you have to get to one. Like, you have to get there. And we were the 13 seed and lost to Elm Creek, a really talented and senior heavy Elm Creek team. And after that gloom, you're frustrated, you're upset, your season's over, but you know, you realize like they were probably better than us.
Yep.
But this experience, you know, playing in a extremely loud winner go home, you know, big time game, like you're one game away from state, you know, your kids have to experience that.
Yep.
And, you know, that actually motivated us for the summer. Like, that's the importance of getting to that level. And then the next year, you fast forward 12 months, we're the 4 seed. We're hosting the district final at our tiny gym, and it is packed to the brim. I mean, there's a line all the way down our main street. I mean, it's crazy. And to get into our gym. And I think we went into that game a little overconfident. Like, I did. I know I did as a coach. Like, we can pick in Nebraska if you want to play on Saturday, Monday, or Tuesday. And the moment we won on Thursday, I just said, we're playing Saturday. We are playing exceptional basketball. We're going to win this game. We have the two best players, in my opinion. Like, don't give them any time to scout. Let's play right now. And then we have the lead after the first, second, and third quarter. They end the game on a 12-0 run. You lose 7. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely heartbroken.
Yep.
And I was like, man, the sun is not coming up tomorrow. But like I said, your question is, what do you learn? I learned that I'm not patient. And there still are levels to this. And sometimes getting stung like that, where you thought all the stars were aligning and you still got beat. Like, that just, you know, it makes you realize that you always have to be thankful and grateful for opportunities and make the most of them. And so this year, when we made district final, I looked at my AD and I said, don't even ask me if we'll play Saturday. We're playing Tuesday. I said, we'll play next Tuesday if we can. We are going to take as much time as a team to practice and prepare and just be together.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. You hurry into it and we lost Saturday. We're done. Like, that was the worst part, is I wanted to go to practice Monday.
Yeah.
But so we prepared, and again, getting stung and losing and that upset last year, talking about motivation for practice, all I had to do was bring it to Riverside. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess we're in a practice like this, we'd be happy just using the Riverside again, and instantly the intensity picks up. Guys are flying around again, and yeah, it made my job pretty easy to have pretty intense practices this year. And again, without losing the last 2 years, we probably don't make the run we did this year.
Yep. Well, it was a really good run. You know, obviously, in any small community, you're kind of the biggest show in town, and it had been a while since McCool Junction had had success. Last state tournament had been 1987, so I'm sure you heard a lot of that when you go to the restaurant in town or whatever, you know, it may be you're stopping at the convenience store for a soda or whatever, cause you're coaching from 2 to midnight every day or whatever it is, coach. Nah, I'm just kidding. But you know, you went through this run, like I said, first tournament win, or first tournament since 87, first tournament win since 85. So it's been 40 years, for some people, a lifetime or two. You know, again, let's kind of ask that same question. Now you get over that hump to get to the state tournament. What did you learn once you got down there and went through? And it's, you know, our state tournament here in Nebraska, for folks that just don't know, this was just this last weekend. So I know you've only had 3 or 4 days to reflect on this, coach, but kind of initially, what are some of the big lessons that you're going to take from this run that you had?
Yeah. And I definitely want to preface this with this, so the listeners understand, like, I'm 28, so it was before I was alive, latest. So I just want to put that out there. No, I think the biggest thing, you know, again, talking to those guys, I talked to you about my mentors, you know, talking to Kylie Yates, talking to other coaches, my former coach, Coach Cameron Hudson, about like, hey, like, we're really excited to be down there. And they're like, no, you're not excited to be down there. Like, you expect to be down there. And make sure your kids understand that. And, you know, the biggest thing was, I just kept trying to tell my kids and sell to them the saying, you know, you've been there and experienced, that's overrated. You know, it's overrated because Elm Creek is who we played and they've been there the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time for us in 38. You said that, you know,
yeah.
The mantra of, oh, they've been there. They've been there. I just kept saying, that's overrated. I said, you want to win. You want to be competitive. Go out and just play your butt off. And so, yeah, I think the biggest takeaway was, again, talking to their coaches about what should we do? What should we expect? How do I keep the kids' nerves down? Is you got to be extremely aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't press as a team, but we pressed in the state tournament right away. I mean, we even tried to press Johnson Rock, the two-time, now three-time state champions. Uh-huh. Like, from the very get-go. Just go out there, kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, in all three of our games, our first game, we were up 7-0. Elm Creek takes a timeout. Johnson Brock, I think we were up 9-2. And in the third game, we were up 10-0. Mm-hmm. So that was huge, huge mm-hmm. for me. And again, I would never thought, you know, we're not a pressing team and talking to a veteran coach. Neither are we, but we are a state. You know, get those kids dialed in. It's an easy buy.
Yep. Like you said, you'd mentioned you lost to Johnson Brock in the semifinal, and you know, Lucas Dollinghaus, shameless plug speaker at the coaches clinic here in a month or so. But you know, 3-time state champion, extremely successful program the last few years, kind of the gold standard, if you will, of D1 boys basketball the last 3 or 4 years. What did you learn just from that particular game about playing a team that has, you know, been there, done that at the highest levels and continues to dominate?
Yeah. When Coach Dollinghaus talks at the clinic, I'll probably have to just get up and leave. It's too hard for me. No, and I tell him that too. I'm going to give him some hard times. But even talking to Coach Dollinghaus before the game, like that group that he has that has won, you know, they've been playing together since. You know, you know, as a coach, your youth program is so critical. And that's what we're trying to build in McCool, you know, is get a group of kids that are cohesive. And, you know, what I learned from them was the value of being a champion and the value for him as a coach of being in this moment. I know I just told you it's overrated to say being here, but he outcoached the heck out of me. You know, we were tied at halftime. And I thought our kids were executing things really well. We were doing exactly what we had to do to keep a great team like that competitive. And it was 18-18 going into half. And our halftime speech was, hey, like, told you we can play with them. Like, we're right there. And, you know, we talked a little bit about adjustments. But most of it was like rah-rah. Like, hey, we can do this 16 minutes. And I just know, I never asked him, and I'll talk to him at the clinic, but I can almost promise you, their halftime speech was totally different. It was, are you kidding me? You know, they were challenging their kids left and right. There's probably some butt chewing, you know, a lot of, again, just getting after their kids, and they came out and played like it. And, you know, in the third quarter, the game switched. They their entire intensity, and we really couldn't, because again, I feel as a coach, you know, I kind of gave the message to our kids that how we were playing was good enough. Mm-hmm. And his message to his kids were, We gotta amp it up. Like, yeah, this is for the state championship on the line tomorrow. And they came out and played like champions, played it as a cohesive group as we've ever played. And again, showed us that defense wins championships. They can score 80 points. Man, they just locked us up. We scored 2 in the third quarter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he kept it really simple and he knew his kids. And so, no, that I think the learning from them is, you know, it takes time. Like I said, they've been playing together for years. So.
Yeah. I remember a game kind of similar to that. And yes, I was alive in 1991. Thank you for referencing that, Coach. You probably still weren't alive if my math is correct in 1991. But when the Fab Five from Michigan played Duke in the finals, and Duke was ahead by one, I think, at halftime. And then the Duke team, they were going for back-to-back national championships, and they just took it to just another level, and they proved why they were champions in Michigan. And, you know, it was five freshmen. They just weren't ready for that level. They thought they were, but they weren't. And that's one of those stories that kind of popped into my head when you said that. So
I love that.
Yeah. So like I said, it's only been 3 or 4 days since everything wrapped up. You know, what effect do you think this will have on your off season?
And the biggest thing is, you know, even last off season too, like I'm going to meet with my assistant probably not tomorrow, like you said, blizzard, but maybe Thursday after, like you said, it's probably going to be 65 and melted everything away.
Yep.
You know, we're going to sit down and where's your plan? What camps do you want to go to?
Mm-hmm.
And our whole motto going into last year was, we have got to put our kids in positions to fail.
Yeah.
We have got to do that. And that's, again, that is critical. But, you know, it's putting kids in position to fail the right way. You know, we're a class D1 school. You know, we have roughly 40 boys in our entire high school.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go try and play as many classes up that we feel we can compete with.
Yeah.
And try to go 500 this summer. Like, yep. Honestly, like, yep. We, you know, we hope that by doing that, by playing class C2, C1, you know, dabble maybe in a class B team here or there, you know, and if we can battle them and go about 500 this summer and figure out what we need to work on and what we're pretty good at with our new lineup, you know, losing a couple pretty good seniors, we got to try to, again, organize our summer to be 500. So that when you play teams your size, you hope that you go into most games pretty confident that you have the best team that's set for that floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think not only for like your summer, if you expect to be good. Now, everybody's different. Like if you're taking over a rebuilding program, you actually want to hunt some wins in the summertime to get some confidence going. I mean, you know, and I've been in both situations where it's like, okay, who can we play that we can compete with and get some confidence? We don't need our doors blown off by 40, you know, because that's happened too much. But I've also been in a situation where it's like, gosh, you know, like when I was at Scud, we had some teams where it's like, we need to go play a bunch of class A's and really challenge ourselves. And if, you know, Des Moines, Dowling kicks the crap out of us, so be it. We, you know, we need to be challenged. I think if you feel like you're going to be a good team, you know, knocking on the door of the state tournament, you need to try and find a way where you win, like you said, between 50 and 60% of your summer games. Now, if you play that challenging schedule and you win 80, 85% of your games and you feel like legitimately, and you know, in your heart of hearts that you've really challenged yourself, then you're feeling pretty doggone good. You know, and I had a couple of teams like that where, hey, we played some class A's and we did this and we won 85% of our games. Okay. We got, and you know, and those teams turned out to be outstanding, you know? I think the same thing with your youth program. You don't want to win every game with your youth teams. If you're winning every game with your youth teams, you are not challenging yourself enough. And I think sometimes, elementary and junior high parents kind of have a hard time of understanding that no, it's okay to get beat as younger teams, as long as we're playing good teams and we're challenging ourselves and we're making ourselves better. Now, again, we don't want to win 20% of our games. That means we're playing far too challenging of a schedule, but we need to play somebody. And I think that's a great attitude that you got going there, Coach.
Nailed it with, you got to get your elementary and junior high parents to understand just what you said. Like, I coach junior high, and you know, we play some teams that their junior high coaches are running continuity ball screen actions, you know, and I'm going, geez, man, like, do you realize our practices are just nothing but rebounding and shooting and defensive slides? Like, our kids have no idea what I mean when I yell, we got a high head and go under, you know, this guy's screen. Like, they have no idea.
Yeah,
now I'm proud of it. We have, again, we're very blessed with some pretty good kids coming down the pipe for us. that we're able to scrap and find a way to maybe win, but we don't win because of X's and O's. We win because our kids are pretty athletic and they have some skills. Like, and the thing is, we lose some games to teams that maybe aren't as talented as us, but I'm sitting there going, it's because they're running, you know, crazy offenses and calling a timeout, and now they're going a 3-2 matchup zone that I know their high school team's a man team. And I'm sitting there going, boys, we will scout them in high school. We will be ready for them in high school, and we'll be better, you know, and that's been the case. And it's been nice to see that like, okay,
yeah,
coaching both levels, junior high and high school, you know, coach, we just lost this team last year and we just beat them in JV by 25. I said, yeah, because, you know, we can prepare for a ball screen this time, you know, it's a little different. And same with elementary. I have been blessed with some young with elementary coaches here that understand that, because we have those conversations a lot about, I just want our kids to understand at McCool Junction, we want to play really freaking hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one. I said, we cannot have kids that, I'm hoping our kids are done crying, after adversity hits by the time they're coming into junior high, because of, again, our elementary coaches have laid the standard of, hey, whether we're up 10 or down 10, we're playing really hard because we play from McCool Junction.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things, and you guys are just close enough to like Lincoln, where I'm guessing you maybe dabble in there, you know, a little bit. But when I was at Fort Calhoun, I would, you know, parent be like, you know, well, that, look at that team there. So, okay, look at that kid right there. That kid's going to Bellevue West. That kid's going to Bellevue East. That girl's going to Marion. That girl's going to Millard West. They're all on this team together. That kid's going to Duchesne. Are any of those teams on our schedule? Nope. Okay, exactly. So let's use them to make our kids better, so that when we play the teams that we play, we are taking advantage of our proximity and playing these teams so that we win down the line. Now, not everybody wants to buy that. That's the hard part. Nobody, you know, we have a little less tolerance for having our kids kind of fight through failure a little bit. But I think those are things that you need to express and explain to your parents as you're building your youth program. Yeah, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to challenge ourselves. Don't worry about the X's and O's. Worry about, you know, biggest thing to worry about is, how did we play at the beginning of the season versus how did we play at the end of the season? And let's just be playing a lot better at the end of the season than we were at the beginning of the season. I think that's a consistent message you have to have. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you. Your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players, grades 6 through 9, going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done. And we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coach, at this time, we are going to do a little John Wooden here, a little John Wooden quote of the day. Coach Wirtz, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Ready since I woke up this morning. I'm so excited.
All right. Well, from page 63 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, youngsters are told, think big. Anything is possible. I would never go that strong. I want them to think positively, but when you think big, you often start thinking too big, and I believe that can be very dangerous. Wanting an unattainable goal will eventually produce a feeling of, what's the use? That feeling can carry over into other areas, and that can be bad. What do you like about it?
You know, I mean, that one kind of resonated with me because I, you know, every year is a hard year as a coach, and I've had some challenges even with the success we had this year. In fact, this is probably the hardest year I've had coaching. And I think I'm going to put it away from the kids. I'm going to put it on the parents. Like that quote to me, and John Wooden saying, you know, telling people to think big, anything's possible. I think that you lose a sense of reality that way. Mm-hmm. Like think positive. Like, yeah, you want to get out of your comfort zone. You want to challenge yourself. But when parents lose senses of reality, like, because their reality and their expectation for what their kid can and can't do.
Yes.
It's so far from the truth. You know, they, like I said, they've lost their sense of reality. So if they would just think positive, like I have conversations with your kids on a daily basis about how important they are to our team to win.
Yeah.
And your son averages 1 point a game. And from 3 to 5:30, he is an exceptional teammate and player. But I'm losing in translation that from 5:31 to 10 p.m. that night, when sitting across from the dinner table, you're telling your kid he needs to shoot every single time he hits the ball.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, like the quote says, think big or think positive. Like, your team is about to play in the state tournament. How awesome of an opportunity that you get a chance to check in and go help your team go win a state tournament game for the first time in 40 years. But I just know that, again, and we have a lot of parents that say that, but we have some that don't.
Yeah.
And they're thinking big. They're thinking their kid needs to be in the newspaper. He needs to be the one being interviewed after the game by ESPN. And sorry to tell you, you know, Karen, we don't even have ESPN at our games. Like, what are you doing here? Like, your kid helps us win by checking out, guarding this guy, and diving on the floor. So quit. And he loves that. He does it so well. But yeah, when he goes home and you're telling him to think big, that he could be the guy that hits the game winner for us when he shoots 25% from three, like, and actually, he's probably shooting closer to about 20%, let's be honest here. But yeah. So anyway, like, yeah. When you're reading that is kind of, like I said, I struggled with that a little bit this year with some parents and that sense of they're thinking big. They're not thinking positive, and they're losing their sense of reality.
You know, my dad, my first year that I, as a head coach, that I really struggled with some parent issues. You know, my dad gave me a great saying, and I don't know if I've ever shared it with you, Jabe. You know, everybody, he said, you know, every parent loves their kid a little bit more than every other kid on the team. And I'm like, oh, man, that's true. You know, that's true. And you do try to keep that in mind, but at the same time, you do have to have those tough conversations. I mean, I love the way you say, you know, the dinner table, you know, that's definitely one of my pet phrases, you know, the dinner table, just kick my butt with this kid or with this family or with this team, you know, and that can be really difficult. And you, all you can do is try to, you just try to keep that message consistent within the locker room, and you hope that the dinner table doesn't damage what you've tried to establish in the locker room to a point where it becomes detrimental to the team. It's a tough fight. It's the stuff that, you know, more than anything else, you know, the X's and O's usually don't keep us up at night. The practice planning usually doesn't keep us up at night. It's those type of things that keep you up at night, right, Coach?
Yeah.
100%. Coaching basketball is easy. Like, I mean, not easy. If you're a coach, the actual coaching of basketball is probably one of the easier parts of the job.
Correct.
Right? There's nothing really easy about being a coach. But, like, just simply when the ball is tipped in the next 32 minutes, I look forward to those 32 minutes. Like yep. you said, it's the other stuff outside of that that really, like you said, is the hard part.
Yeah. How about this? Coaching basketball is easy. Coaching people is hard. Yeah. Okay. Trademark, a pen and a napkin, 2025. There we go. So let's get into coaching basketball, Coach. Let's talk about your half-court offense, what you'd like to do there. You had a terrific post player. I see he committed football-wise to was it Missouri Western? Am I wrong with that? Am I right? Yep.
Missouri Western and Joe.
Yep. So, and obviously it's great when you've got a big, strong, athletic kid that you can run your offense through there. But talk about your half court philosophy, Coach. As you well know, I'm going to listen. If I'm going to interrupt, I'm going to try and do it as politely as I can. But go ahead and cook there, Coach Wirtz. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the half court.
Well, yeah, first off, definitely interrupt me. Don't ever, because, I mean, that will help me. That'll help me. So, we like to run a lot of motion concepts, pass and cut. You know, we do four out, one in. Our post, you alluded to, is 6'6", 300 pounds, with the best hands and the best feet on our entire team.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a rare thing in basketball anymore. And so we'd be stupid in our class to put him anywhere other than the block. I mean, he is just unguarded. You know, one of the prep reporters called him a cheat code at state, and I just thought that was perfect.
Yeah.
So anyway, what we like to do, you know, for my first year and honestly my first year and a half, we were always pass, cut, fill, pass, screen away, fill. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, every coach in the world tells you how important you got to touch the basket, cut the basket. Well, we play him on the block. And we started to realize real quick that when he's ball side, when we pass the corner, you know, if you could imagine guy in the block and we fill four out spots, our guys are cutting and becoming defenders to our best player on the floor.
Or they're bringing a double team to him.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, reality says he's getting guarded by one. Now our cutter is cutting in his proximity. That's two defenders and they're defending. I mean, honestly, he's getting triple teamed because of our doing. Mm-hmm. And so we've had to make a real big philosophy change with a great back to the basket center of we just emphasize like split action, screen away, reads. The more moving we do without the ball, the better. And honestly, our best scorers from the perimeter are our best screeners. We keep things very, very simple. You know, and I'd like your opinion on things because I'm always here to learn too. But we've done it two ways. We've done where our best center there, a 6'6" guy, is going block to block, flashing whenever the ball's reversed. But we've also planted him on one block and said, okay, well, if the ball's away from him, they have to have some sort of help side because mm-hmm. if not, our guys are, you know, if they hug our guy, our guards know they got to attack something with the dribble.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we this year especially limited dribbles. Our guys had to get downhill, and they got two dribbles back. And in fact, a third dribble might be loophole because it's just too slow. And that's when we have our most tips and turnovers and pick sixes, like we know, and that type of stuff. So, you know, we do a lot of motion based concepts out of the heads. And I like to share is, you know, the best thing we've done, like I said, if I can, maybe we could take anything out of it, if you have a good post and you run four out, one in, is we only cut to screen for him. So we pass and we'd cut, and then we would go basically set like a flex type screen to get him to move. And I tell you what, like, his defender was so caught up in what he was doing, and you just mix in the right amount of ball movement, spacing, screening, and then you throw in that one cut after three passes. You know, we'll just tell our kids, hey, three passes and then quick five action. And that our quick five is a quick screen for our five. I mean, we keep it as simple as possible. So three passes and then quick five. One, two, three. Guy who threw that last pass, and then you'll find Mayhew, our center, and go screen his guy.
Regardless of the angle. Regardless of the angle?
Regardless. Regardless. Yeah. And because again, simple. I do not want kids to think. I don't want kids to have to be like, nope, we don't want to have patterns a lot either. Mm-hmm. I think when you pattern things, you limit kids' creativity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I can never promise where a defense is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it looks awkward at times, but if anything, it's a different look. You know, it's something different, and they have to respect. So.
I love it. That's really, I mean, I'm sitting there. Now you got my, not, you know, as Michael Scott would say, my brain is spinning a mile an hour. But now you kicked it up to like 10 or 15 miles an hour here. But I like that thought, that idea, you know, if you got, and a lot of people, and what we used to do, without a dominant post is we would take them and put them in that dunker spot. So, you know, they were always away in the short corner dunker spot, or we called it the room because that's what, you know, Hoiberg calls it. And that's, you know, my son was actually the one that suggested that. But if you ran that concept and then every fifth possession, you make that call, you know, you guys call it quick. So let's say we call it quick five, boom. And after, you know, four passes or whatever, and you still run that even out of the dunker spot, that's a great changeup. If I get back into it, thank you, Coach Wirtz. That is going into the playbook. It's really simple. I like it. I really, really like it. That's good stuff.
And if I, again, just the next best thing out of that is, I mean, if you've practiced and trained kids to screen away, I mean, that cross screen by your guard, whatever the angle is, somebody else on the perimeter is probably headhunting the screener's person. So now you're screening for the screener, the down screen. And you got all sorts of action up top to just catch and read.
Yeah.
If you're open, we're going to shoot it. You know, we're going to shoot it. Why? I mean, it's probably not the greatest thing, but, you know, we're not going to pass up a wide open three that we practice a lot in practice to dribble one or two into their bigs and into a bunch of junk. So, but yeah, no, I'm glad I gave you something.
No, that's good. That's it. You know, you said you like to keep it simple, Jabe. What are you doing in practice to teach those movements, those motions, you know, those type of things? To, you know, how are you breaking that down in practice so your kids understand how simple you want to keep it?
You almost every day, we call it green curl pop shooting. And so it's guy in the corner, guy up top with the ball. He's going to pass it to me. So let's say we're both up in the slot. So the guy with the slot passes to the other guy in the slot, which is me, the coach, and he's going to go downstream. And the corner guy's going to curl again, more so just to congest things. He's not curling into the paint because again, that's where our big guy is. But then he's almost curling right back to the corner. The guy's popping up. We have two, me and a manager pass, and they're both getting catch and shoot threes.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we do that a million times. And then we do just some different simple actions. You know, you rep it ad nauseum so that they're doing it in their sleep. And if you do something every day from 7th grade to 12th grade, because again, I get the blessing to coach these kids in junior high,
mm-hmm.
and they know my vocabulary. You know, that's just some simple breakdown drills. You know, in the off season, we like to get pads out, just like not pads, but, things you do your box, like boxes for box jumps. We set them out there and we play one-on-one with a passer and they come off of screens a lot, you know, and they're reading screens. So now that box is not moving and that is their screener. And we have, you know, one defender, one offensive player, and they're trying to get open any way possible off of a screen and, you know, those types of things. And then we also, you know, kind of tape off the floor is like, this is the no-go zone. And again, it just sounds weird. And I feel like a bad coach to tell kids, You're not allowed to cut to the block or cut to the paint. But again, if you're moving this well and able to get your defender to guard you this well away from the paint, we're throwing up to our post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Houston has a luxury. So we do a lot of those, like, small sided games that way. Actually keeps it fun and kind of competitive at practice, but then we do a lot of
Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Coach, let's talk a little bit about, since you brought it up, and a lot of people don't bring this topic up, so I'm going to jump on it while I can here. Let's talk about, you said you wanted to talk about, you know, talking and communicating with your administration, and at times that can be a very good relationship. At times it can be a strained relationship. Sometimes, in the best of times, it can be a strained relationship, you know, depending on that. You know, I know that over my years of experience, when I've had good administrators, it has been an absolute blessing. And then sometimes when you don't have an administrator that you don't get along with as well, it can be very, very difficult. You know, so what are some things that you've tried to do in your career to try and communicate openly, be as transparent as you can with your administrators? And obviously, you're in a small school, so you're working pretty tightly with one another there. So how have you made it work, bud?
Yeah, no, I picked this one just because mine's kind of a unique experience with administrators. So the first year I was head coach, one of my assistants was the superintendent. And that was a hard thing to explain to people. It's like, yeah, my assistant is the superintendent. Like, and honestly, for the first 2/3 of the season, it felt like every day I was having an observation. You know, that anxiety you get when you get the email that says, "Hey, pick a date because the principal observed your lesson plan." Like, so every day for a while, and it wasn't healthy. Honestly, it wasn't. It was tough. And I, you know, and he's our superintendent's great. He's a former coach, and he was way better about it than I was making in my head. You know, I felt like, man, if my practice plan is terrible, he's going to roast me or he's going to be upset with me. Wasn't the case at all. He actually helped the first year just to, because he knows how hard it is to be a coach, honestly. Like, he was a great guy, but it was hard. And so I'm not going to lie, 2/3 of the season, my first year, I just came to him and I said, "Your presence makes me uncomfortable at times." And like, you talk about telling that to the boss, like, that was hard. And he handled it really well, which, again, total blessing, because like you said, it's not that way everywhere. And the rest of the season went a lot better for me. And I just said, and his presence, in the sense of, I just get nervous around you, and I just want to know that I shouldn't have to be. He said, "Absolutely not. You're doing a great job. I'm here to help." And then it just took off from there. Again, we're a K-12 building, and our superintendent and our principal do a great job. They're visible and they're present. So I cross paths with them all the time. And unlike most coaches, when I'm nervous or I have questions about basketball, I'll go to my superintendent's office, knock on his door, open the door. I don't even care if he's on his computer. I'll be like, "Hey, oh my gosh, Uncle has this really good baseline play. How would you defend this?"
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, I think the biggest thing is whether it's the right idea or the wrong idea. I'm just, like you said, transparent. I'm as truthful as possible with them.
Yeah.
Because I reality of it is, like, we live in a world now where teachers are needed everywhere.
Yes.
And coaches are being, people are being begged to coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, and at the same time, we're running people out of coaching every single day.
Absolutely.
I just don't get it. I just don't get it. But, like, the reality of it is, like, if I'm going to go in there, if I'm going to say something at a practice and a mom or a dad's going to call the superintendent and he doesn't have my back, like, you couldn't fire me at this job and have somebody fill it. Like, there's enough people lining up to be the basketball coach, at least around here. You know what I'm saying? It's so, like, I've told him that, like, I'm going to coach as hard as humanly possible. I'm going to give you my best every single day. And some people won't always agree with it. And I'm sure he doesn't always agree with it at times, but I've just bluntly honest with him, you know, said, you know, will you support me on these different things? And I think honestly, just being communicating and being open and honest with him and being dumb enough to go in and say that to him, it helped kind of set the tone. And, you know, we even had a circumstance this week during the state tournament where we had some issues, and I told him, I said, I might have to make a really hard decision here. What do you think? He said, whatever you do, I'll support it. And I think that just knowing
well, right there,
it allows, yeah, it allows you to coach, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, I've been very blessed. I've been at the same school for 7 years, had an incredibly supportive administration, but, I know because of that, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't, I'd probably be gone, because there's going to be another teaching job somewhere. There's going to be another coaching job somewhere. But now that I have a kid, though, I realize that's not always easy just to pick up your family and move, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, I, at this point, like, the way I view it is, as strange as it may sound, as coaches, we got to understand we also hold some power.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to stand up for yourself. You have, because again, check the NDE website. There are hundreds of teaching openings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, so why we need to stick up for ourselves. We're the ones putting in the time. And again, easy for me to say in a place where my superintendent's going to back me up on that.
Yeah. No, and that's, you are in a good place. And it, but it's, you know, unfortunately, it's not like that everywhere. And that's what makes our profession what it is. And trust me when I say, I just had a conversation very recently with someone who is very well connected. And it is, let's just say, at much higher levels than us, it's the same issues that administrators make the job difficult for coaches at extremely high levels. And you think that it's just that way at McCool Junction or someplace in Nebraska or Iowa or all the other places that people are going to hear this, but it is everywhere. It is at all levels. And you got to try and fight through it at times. Like you said, coach, sometimes you just go, hey, if I'm not that welcome here, okay, I'll move on. See what you can do without me. You know, and I've been in that situation as well. And, you know, you just got to let things play out. And the ultimate thing that you got to do is you've got to do what makes you the happiest. I think that's the place that I have landed at is, if I don't have that joy, then it's time to move on, whether that's to another job or to not coach at all or whatever it may be. I think that's the mindset you have to have as a coach. And that's the power that you have as a coach.
I mean, like you said, the hardest part of coaching is not X's and O's. It's playing politics, playing psychology. And that's the reality, though. Like, you have to play a little bit of the politics game and just to try to keep all your people happy, even though you're like, this is ridiculous.
Yep. Jabe, let's end on this. Let's talk a little special situations. Baseline out of bounds plays, sideline out of bounds plays. What do you like to do there? Let's jump back into the X's and O's in the scheme of things here. Let's start with baseline out of bounds plays. What's your philosophy there? I'm assuming you were talking offense.
we, again, keep it simple. We do a lot of screen the screener. We do a lot of America's play. Inbounders coming in for a screen in the corner.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kylie Yates, you know, he's even, we've questioned and challenged each other. You know, you only get this limited amount of time in practice. You know, do you need 6 or 7 inbounds plays, or can you run 1 or 2 really well that either get you a bucket, or you know you'll be able to have an outlet guy open to get you the ball in, and why don't you run one of your half-court sets, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I disagree with him. We have 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 inbounds plays. We add 1 or 2 here or there along the season. But honestly, Marty, I would love to talk about our based on our balanced defense.
Sure, let it rip, man.
Yeah, well, first off, I'm going to preface it with this. It's not great, but it's unique, I feel. Like, so we go 1-3-1 on all inbounds plays.
Okay.
Defensively. And so we play about 50% of the time man-to-man defense, and then about 50% of the time 1-3-1. And so I always liked going zone on inbounds plays because I am so tired of getting turned on pick the picker. I'm so tired of it. Getting back screen on flex, so we go zone. Uh-huh. But our 1-3-1 lines up with our baseline runner on the ball, but he faces away from the ball. Again, I will always tell kids, if they throw it off your butt and it bounces perfectly back in their hands and they make a layup without us making a basketball play, that's my fault, because I probably should have had somebody else in there, or that guy's really good. So our baseline runner is facing away from the ball. Our middle guy is under the hoop, and then our backside wing is on the backside. So we're going to definitely line up like a 2-3. So we got our 3 guys down there. Our ball side wing is going to be about where the elbow is if it's a traditional box setup. Mm-hmm. And our top guy is going to be on the backside elbow.
Okay.
So again, we line up in a 2-3. Now, where do you throw the ball most of the time, Marty, when you're running your baseline out of bounds plays? Where's your first typically going to go?
I would probably say, let me think of the set. Okay. Give me one. Geez. Math. You know, a lot of times it's going to go strong side corner, I would say. A good percentage of the time. I'm trying to think of the blobs that we've been. So yeah.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Like most plays are going to go ball side corner. You know, they're going to pop out, they're going to screen up, somebody's going to flash that corner, and that's where we want the ball to go. Now, again, this is where I preface, we haven't made this look very good this year. I don't know why we haven't ran it very well. But when the ball goes to that corner, we're a 1-3-1, we are going to trap you as hard as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is where we want the ball to go. But too many times, we let kids catch it, and they shoot a 3, and it's I look like an idiot. But we let the ball go there. Your baseline runner, who is in front of the ball, sprinting out our wing, ball side wing, was that elbow. He has kind of, you know, shimmied over with the guy cutting to the corner, and he is now, we're trapping you hard. Our top guy is rotating all the way over to take away that next pass up. You know, usually you go ball side corner, ball side slot.
Yeah,
he is gambling on that. Our middle guy is denying your inbounder coming back in. He has shifted over. And then our backside wing is playing the most aggressive 1-3-1 backside wing possible, and we're trying to read eyes, get tips, and get steals. And I am not kidding you. We will play, and this is no disrespect. We have played some really bad teams that we've allowed the ball to go to the corner, and they just caught it and shot a 3 and made it. But then this weekend, we probably because we practiced a little bit more, but this weekend, a state tournament, we caused a turnover, I think, for every single team on our baseline out of bounds defense, because they got the ball to the corner. We actually trapped it. We got our hands on basketballs. We got tips. We got steals. And again, in a game where you play at state level, that one run out layup can really ignite your team.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Cheap points. That's where it's at. And those momentum turners, that's where it's at as well. So, where did you come about that? How did you, was it just something that you liked, that you saw? You know, it's a unique way of looking at it, Coach. Where'd you come up with it?
Absolutely everything I studied today is not mine. Not a chance. Again, I don't know anything. This is all just on a napkin somewhere.
The emphasis is on somewhere, because you don't know where you left it, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, but this one I have to credit. This is Eric Kessler. I'm going to say Humphrey St. Francis, or now known as Archangels.
Yep.
So my senior year, we played them in the state championship game. and we won, which I was very proud to win a state championship. But they ran probably the best 1-3-1 I ever faced in my life. And so I bumped elbows with him at a basketball camp the first year I was as coach. And I said, hey, can you kind of tell me what you do for your 1-3-1? So he said, we're going to practice 1-3-1, but how do we do this on an inbounds play? And he said, here's what we do. And that is exactly what they do. So if he didn't want that getting out, I just totally ruined it for him. But, you know, that's exactly where I got it from Eric Kessler, a phenomenal coach there at Humphrey.
Well, thank you, Eric Kessler. Thank you, Kylie Yates. Thank you to Jay Wirtz, our guest this week for our Pen and Napkin podcast, episode number 268. Coach Wirtz, if people want to know more about you, more about your program, how can they find out about that?
Honestly, they can check out our X page. It's just MCJ_3B's Boys Basketball is our Twitter handle. I'm gonna be honest, man. Hopefully they can just find out about us by watching us play during the season. I'm not a huge social media guy. We are well traveled though. Hopefully they see us at an AAU tournament here or there in the summer. Or I said, I'd love to have as many people follow our team during the school year.
Perfect. Well, Coach Wirtz, thanks for coming on here this week. Hope it was good for you, my man.
Opportunity. I was shocked when you reached out to me because I'm like, man, Marty, yeah, nobody else you can talk to this week. But hey, I just think, again, I'm just so blessed to be surrounded and know the right people. I'm blessed to have bumped elbows with you at a clinic, and you have no idea the impact your clinic has had on me. Again, the network I've grown from the stuff that you provide coaches and especially young coaches like me, I just can't thank you enough. Again, the amount of time you're putting into to helping other people in this profession is just incredible.
Wow. Thanks, man. That means a lot. I owe you $20 for the advertising there. It's greatly appreciated. So we'll see you in less than a month here. Get that registration turned in and recruit. Don't be afraid to keep recruiting some folks in your network as well and get them out here to West Omaha on April the 12th. So Yeah, appreciate it. Jabe, hold the line here just a second here. We're going to wrap up. Again, Jabe Wirtz, head boys basketball coach, McCool Junction, one of the best young coaches in the state of Nebraska. Just done a terrific job. And I want to thank him for coming on this week. We also want to thank our founding sponsor. Without them, this would not be possible. And that, of course, is Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, email. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Get signed up for the coaches clinic. We got the Varsity Prep Academy, got another big project coming out here. Really, really close to feeling comfortable to announcing what that's going to be. Just a lot of really good things going on here. So, great, great podcast here with Coach Wirtz. Just a really, really good conversation. And like I say, if you want to meet the guy in the flesh, come out to the coach's clinic on April the 12th here. He will be there. He'll be signing autographs, whatever you would like for him to do.
Hey, I'm the sexy bald guy there, man. Don't look at the ugly ones. I'm the sexy bald guy.
Sounds good. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.